American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting you from the internet for Monday, December the 28th, 2009. And wouldn't you know it, this is probably going to be the last show of the year, being as I only got two more days left in the year, and I'm talking hot. I'm still talking hot, adjusting my own levels on my own show, you know, as we're going on. But anyway, right now it's Monday, December the 28th, 2009, and you're listening to Newsreel, the wild global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get there by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk, Red Mercury SE, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, KJAG Radio, Osprey Networks, Creek Radio, iTunes, Podcast.com, Podcast Alley. And, of course, we are broadcast every Thursday on Second Life. And now, the Thursday of the last show of the decade, crazy shit, last show of the decade of 2010 is being recorded on Christmas Eve of 2009. And the people who showed up for the Christmas Eve 2000 show, the last show of the decade inside of the virtual reality environment that is Second Life, because if you're listening to this years from now in the future, you may not know what Second Life is, but it does exist. It's a very cool place. And if you could get there, you go to a place which is a node called Archers at grid 155-74666. And with us here tonight, we have Sophia, Smurf, Schmo, Mindy, Mephit, Kimmy, JC, Griffin, Flash Dewey, Darklight, and Oi. And if you want to know what Second Life's really like, it's kind of like an IRC chat channel, except for there's really, really hot women. And people who dress up like animals, which is a little strange, but that's pretty much, if you wanted to know what Second Life was all about, hey, if you're going to be staring at text anyway, you may as well have some cartoons going along with you. It's kind of like why MUDs are not as good as Dungeons & Dragons. Because if you're going to sit in your basement and pretend that you're a dwarf, you may as well as invite some friends over. You know, sit around, have a good time. It's a good deal. Now, let's get in. You know, and that's something that's I know that Baldy, the guy who built this place, he has got to be, you know, listening right now. He's going to be listening to this show. He's probably not here. He's got, doing something. But he's got to be listening to the show for sure. And I'm thinking that he's always asking, well, what should we do? What should we do? What we need is cages on either side of the show full of hot chicks cage dancing. That's what we need, okay? Because if you want to get people in here, you need cage dancing chicks. And you know, I don't care if they're bots. I don't care. Cage dancing chicks. You put them in, people show up. You could go to Mars. If I was to deploy an astronaut to Mars, they should have a fembot that is a cage dancing chick. Because if you want to discover life, don't go looking for it. Just put some, you know, cage dancing chicks, deep space probe, off it goes, whoosh, into space, and life will find it. Okay, trust me. Trust me. They've got an amazing attraction radius, cage dancing women. We're in the, like, light year kind of, you know, radius. It's amazing. That's why there's life on this planet, actually. They're beginning to have theories now, and they're showing a lot of cave paintings of early, you know, hominids doing cage dancing. So I believe that there's something to that. And, of course, Terrence McKenna would back me up with all of his mushroom talk. You know, mushrooms and cage dancing goes together like, you know, fat kids and Smarties. So it's a good go. But anyway, never enough of that. These people showed up inside of Second Life. And thank you very much. And I think, did I get everyone there? Sophia, Smurf, Schmo, Mindy, Mephit, Kimmy, JC, Griffin, Flash, DUI, Darklight, and Oi. Which, hey, thanks for showing up. I think that being in Rant for about 10 years and carrying on here, it's nice to know there's some people hanging out. And at least if I look back on the end of the decade, I can look around the room and say, hey, at least I'm surrounded by good-looking animated people. You know, why not? Not everyone can check out that way. So let's get into some feedback. Hey, Mr. TFM and Taser. Which, you know, Sim's not really liking the whole taser thing. I gotta say, the all-seeing eye of Rant, not so great. You know, he's... but, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. Mr. TFM, why do you hate people who piss in public? We've been doing it for a while, and as long as you're not waving it around, where's the harm? Taser, do you agree or disagree with Mr. TFM? Curiously noted from Deset. Well, Deset. You gotta have standards, okay? You have to have a standard somewhere. Now, I get stuff like this where people are like, you know, they're like, why is it bad to piss in public? Well, aside from the fact from being, you know, totally unsanitary and completely vulgar, the only thing that separates us from the animals, really, is self-control. That's it. I mean, animals have some self-control, too. But I would like to think of myself as kind of an enlightened being, you know, and generally enlightened beings do not piss themselves or in public. I mean, come on, man. Jesus, it's just, it's disgusting. It is a disgusting habit. It's totally wretched. And yeah, it makes me nuts. It's like it's total Steve Martin cleaning woman scenario from Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. Every time I see somebody doing that, I want to, that's why I'm not a cop. It's why I'm not a cop. You know, seriously, I'd be getting Christmas cards from the Taser Company. I really would. You know, people be riding the lightning. Wow, I'd serve more people on my theme park lightning ride than Disneyland. I'm here to tell you. It'd be ridiculous. So, you know, if you can't, like, you know, make it down the street without tinkling on somebody's shrubbery, maybe you should just fucking stay home. You know, I don't know. Maybe I've got sort of a standard there. Now, some people may not agree with that. You know, and have I ever, quote-unquote, pissed in public? Have I ever had to go so badly? Well, you know, necessity derives, but it's not like, you know, you run out to the monkey bars, hang upside down, and, you know, piss all over yourself in front of the kids. All right, I you know, you want to be somewhat discreet about it. You know, I mean, if you got to go and it's a choice between, well, it's either me or him, yeah, I'll go wherever. All right, but I'm just saying, there's, you know, a little bit of discretion. And for some reason, I don't understand this, but people... I've come across the term moon bat. You know, I never heard the term moon bat before. Now, at first I thought it was probably like, it sounds like it could be a scary racial term. You know what I mean? It could be like, what does that mean? This is like, moon is white and bats are considered to be darker in color. So you're like, oh, well, what does that mean? So apparently, as I understand it, just in case I'm stepping in it, a moon bat, as I understand it, is considered to be a completely left-wing nut job, i.e., you know, we should all just eat granola and, you know, return to the earth, that kind of a thing. That is what you would call a moon bat. Just like the neocons, or they get called Nazis, and, you know, neocon vipers and warhawks and all that. There's these moon bat type ideas. And I don't like really the whole death camp neocon thing. That scares me. But what scares me, too, is you get these guys who have, like, zero connection to reality, you know, who honestly believe that the taser is a bad invention. I you know, it beats getting shot. I understand that it's an upsetting device, but, you know, I'm not going to get it back up on my Taser high horse again. I've got a lot of people who are mad at me over my views with Taser, but I would still, to this very day, because if I was to be arrested by six cops and I was very angry and all coked out or whatever, I would much rather be tasered than I would be nightsticked down, because, you know, half an hour later I can drink a coffee and think about the mistakes I've made versus 9 months of rehab. But, you know, that's just me. I'm funny like that. I'd rather not take the pain. Some people, you know, I don't know, they seem to like it. But that's getting back from tasers to pissing in public. Yes, discretion is what should be advised. Sort yourself out. And I got this letter here. I'm not going to give the guy's name, but I got this letter. And I get letters like this all the time, so I want to address this. Dear Mr. Kennedy, I have a few questions in regards to the AWOL bag. What is the NATO stock number on the camo AWOL bag you used in the patrolling series? As specifically, what is the model bag called? I'm having difficulty finding that model. Would you be able to cover portable cooking ware in patrolling? I'm interested in your take on portable stoves, essential cookware to have while I'm packing my AWOL bag. I'm not sure if it was mentioned before. I figure if you want to read this on the air for the others. But have you ever considered working with Davies Army Surplus for having two or three AWOL bag configurations and very basic gear setups for what you can select kit, and then work with Dave's for a WOG package discount on the whole package. You may want to consider AWOL bag setup in two configurations, basic and advanced, in the same, you know, Sumerian, vegan, slim person setup for basic and advanced setup. Regards, and, you know, the person gives his name. Okay, now, I get this stuff all the time. I used that particular bag as the AWOL bag because it is out of production. You cannot get it anymore. It is a very, very obscure piece of British equipment. All right? You're never, ever going to find it. Don't bother looking. The purpose of an AWOL bag, there is no one configuration for an AWOL bag. There are guidelines, all right, which is, the guideline is this is what you need to be able to make a halfway decent run that fits in a high-speed bag. That's it. An AWOL bag doesn't have cooking gear in it. Okay, you're not doing long-range reconnaissance. And further to that, you shouldn't be walking around with cooking gear. You need a minimal amount of stuff to get by. You shouldn't be walking around looking like you're on a long-range reconnaissance patrol in an urban environment. Use money instead. Instead of spending all your cash on buying all this gear, save your money. Hold on to that cash. Money, dollars are the bullets of the future, man. If you want to know how to survive the coming apocalypse, save cash. Okay? Have the bucks. Of course, there's the dudes who's going to go off, well, money's going to be worthless. Well, it's not worthless yet. And they've been saying it's going to be worthless for a while. So, you know, it's going to be worth a hell of a lot. Like, yeah, okay, you need to have clothing. You need to have good gear and stuff. But I'm just saying, you know what, man? We didn't do patrolling, and I didn't partner with a lot of these guys just so I could sell product. Dave's let me film there, okay? And they were just really sweet guys. They thought I was nuts until half the goddamn internet showed up in their store. Now they're really nice to me. And if I ever wanted to do anything, yeah, that'd be fine. But I've got to be very careful that I don't come across like some other product endorsement asshole trying to sell the world to the logs, because that's not what I'm about. You know, I never was about that. It was, if I've got good kit, I'll try it out. And if I hear it's good kit, you know, I'll you know, talk about it. Just the same way that, you know, anybody's who's a friend would talk about gear. And that's the way I'd rather do it. So save your money, man. I know what you're, this whole thing about the AWOL bag and you're worried about the future and stuff like that. Don't do it, okay? Just hang on to your cash. Breathe a little bit. You're going to be fine. We're all going to get through this next couple of years. No problem. You don't need to go out blowing your cash on a bunch of crazy shit just to make yourself feel better. Save your money, please. Please save your money. Don't go fucking spending bucks on that. And if you really feel the compelling need to do it, send me $20 and I'll make sure that I keep a spot for you on the Star Cruiser. Don't worry about it. We'll find you. Just lick the dollar bill and I'll scan it for DNA when it gets here. Okay, now, into some news. Into some space news sent in by DC, who sent in a lot of news over the year. I mean, I disagree about a lot of stuff. But, you know, he's essentially, he's a halfway decent guy. You know, he'd be one of the guys that when you're, you know, lining up through the sights on, you'd tug a little to the left to make sure he gets away. He's one of those kind of guys. Anyway, we got some news he sent in from space, which is always exciting. Now, this is awesome. This is an exciting piece of news. I always like it when we get some good space news because it gives you hope, right? It's Christmas Eve. We're recording the show. Good to have a little bit of hope. And my hope is coming in the form of planet GJ1214b. That's a sexy name, eh? We're going to need a new name for that. Somebody, we're going to name a planet here. Well, if we call it that name long enough, eventually the planet will go by that name, you know. So I think that we should rename this planet right now. I'm thinking Waterworld is probably pretty good because it's orbiting a red dwarf star. The Hubble telescope will reveal whether it's suitable for life. Artist impressions are depicted there. A giant water world that is wet to its core has been spotted in orbit around the dim but not too distant star, improving the odds that a habitable planet may exist in our cosmic neighborhood. The planet is nearly three times as large as Earth and is made almost entirely of water, forming a global ocean of more than 15,000 kilometers deep. Yowza! Astronomers detected alien world as it passed in front of the sun, a red dwarf star 40 light years away in a constellation called Opicurus, or Ophicurus, or Opicus, or Pikachu, or it's an O-P-H-O-P-H-I-U-C-H-S. Opicus? Ophiuchus? Ophicus and Doug. In a constellation called Doug, after the Greek name for snake holder. Doug's a snake holder. In the discovery, made with a network of amateur telescopes, being held as a major step forward, the search for planets beyond our solar system that are hospitable to life as we know it. Measurements suggest the planet should be shrouded in a thick atmosphere of hydrogen and helium that blocks visible light from the sun, plunging the watery surface into permanent darkness. The dark oceans of water world. Like, oh, that's Ryla. The weight of the atmosphere keeps the liquid, the water liquid, despite it being a searing 120 to 282 degrees centigrade. So they got a planet they found, and now they're just, you know, they got the slide rulers out, and they're speculating all to hell as to what this could possibly be. And I think it's great because, well, the ocean, if you got water, there's going to be life in it. You know, I mean, you go down into our own oceans, there's stuff down there that's just, we don't even know what's going on inside the ocean. Which is why, you know, for those who are interested, I'm an avid diver. So anything, this has got, you know, space, it's got water in there. You got to like that. You got to like that. You know, as a WOG, it's exciting to know that there are other alien worlds. Now, the other thing is, though, is for those of WOGs out there that have been able to keep their minds open enough to, you know, grasp the concept of alien life and look at some of the research that's been going on the last, you know, 40, 50 years by other WOGs who've gone before us, even without knowing that they were WOGs, there's a lot of talk about undersea UFOs, a lot of talk, bright lights underwater, that kind of a thing, which if you came from a water world, that would, you know, that, hey, whoa, we found these ships covered in red dust. We found a red dust planet. Maybe there's a connection. Sounds kind of remote, I know. I mean, we're pretty much lost in the realms of speculation, but what the hell? And that just warms me up for my next news story, which is in Lost City News. I, like so many of you out there, believe that if you had to choose one character that would be in the top 10 for all that is man, you know what I mean? And I'm talking Marlboro Man kind of concept here. I'm talking about, you know, bare chest, I am man. You know what I mean? That is undeniably male hero role guy. You know, that is all that is man. A bunch of them would be Harrison Ford characters, like Han Solo, I think would be all that is man. But in specifically, I would say that even Han Solo would have to step aside compared to the might that is Indiana Jones. Because really, Indiana Jones is a hell of a character. I'm talking, you know, the Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, not the fridge-nuking horror, which is, you know, kind of gone to buy. But this is what gets me hot, is Lost City. So a group of undersea archaeologists, apparently, have become the latest to claim they've discovered the Lost City of Atlantis. Love it. The scientists, who have refused to identify themselves, have released a series of images taken beneath the Caribbean Sea. They insist the snaps show what appear to be the ruins of a city that could predate Egypt's pyramids, which appeared after 2600 BC, apparently. But no one talks about the fact that the Sphinx predates the pyramids, Egypt, the whole civilization, by a long shot. But, you know, the head of Egypt, they've already figured out how the Egypt thing works, and they don't want to reprint all the books, so they don't let anybody do any more research on that stuff. But anyway, they even told the French newspaper that one of the structures appears to be a pyramid. Now the anonymous group wants to raise funds to explore the secret location where the images were taken. They would not reveal the exact location, however, saying that it was somewhere in the Caribbean Sea. Claims have raised an eyebrow on the internet, although skeptics refrain from debunking them entirely just in case. The legends of Atlantis, a city of astonishing wealth, knowledge, and power, sank beneath the ocean waves, has fascinated millions. Time and time again, hopes to have been raised that the lost city has been found, only those hopes dashed against the evidence of lack thereof. Its location, or at least the source of the legend, remained a tantalizing mystery. In 1997, Russian scientists claimed to have found Atlantis 100 miles off Land's End. In 2000, a ruined town was found under 300 feet of water on the north coast of Turkey in the Black Sea. The area is thought to have been swamped by a great flood around 5000 BC, possibly referred to as the floods of the Old Testament. Interesting. In 2004, an American architect used sonar to reveal man-made walls a mile beneath the Mediterranean between Cyprus and Syria. In 2007, a Swedish researcher claimed that a city lay on the Dodger Bank in the North Sea, which was submerged in the Bronze Age, and as recently as February this year, what appeared to be a grid-like lines that resemble streets were spotted on Google Earth in the ocean off the coast of Africa. Now, somebody spotted that in Google Earth. Now, this specific one here, if somebody could source that for me, if you've got nothing better to do, I'm really interested in Lost City News, because I got to film me doing something. All right, if you guys want more media and you want to have somebody who's doing a no-shit tour of the world trying to get things done, you know, that I've got to do something. So lost cities that are accessible, hey, I'm liking it. But I enjoy this kind of stuff. So if anyone knows that article, or can better still, for loves and kisses, if you can send me a link to the actual Google Maps spot for that underwater city. That would be interesting. Sadly, Google itself quickly debunked the suggestion, exclaiming the lines were left by a boat as it's collecting data for the application. Oh, poo. I guess I should read ahead, eh? Bathymetric seafloor data is often corrected from boats using sonar to take measurements on the seafloor. A spokesman said, the lines reflect the path the boat uses as it gathers the data. Oh, downer. I hate that. And unfortunately, I gotta say that this particular story sounds like a big load of horse hockey. You know, I think it's just a big load of horse hockey. Unfortunately, I think these guys are a scam. They're trying to generate some money. But maybe that's just my cynicism talking here on Christmas Eve. Maybe I just think, you know, for a little bit, maybe it's there. I saw the pictures. They look exciting. You know, ooh, Atlantis, good deal. You know, I'd be more excited if, you know, the underwater sub got torn to shreds. That'd be awesome. Now you got my attention. In Black Shakes News, this was sent to me by Memtron sent this in. A Maine legislator wants to make the state the first, the state of Maine, to require cell phones to carry warnings that say they could cause brain cancer. Although there is no consensus among scientists what they do, and industry leaders dispute the claim. Well, no shit. This is the tobacco of the 20th century. Okay? Cell phones are gonna, everybody knows I've used them, they give me a headache. Okay, it's doing something. Alright? It's not all in your fucking head. Come on, everybody knows this. The now ubiquitous devices carry such warnings in some countries, though no East U.S. states require them. According to National Conference of State Legislators, a similar effort is afoot in San Francisco, where Mayor Gavin Newsom wants his city to be the nation's first to require the warnings. Oh boy, it's going to be corporations versus the Capitol. Maine Rep. Andrea Boland. And numerous studies point to the cancer risk. She's persuaded legislative leaders to allow a proposal to come up for discussion during the 2010 session that begins in January, a session usually reserved for emergency and governor's bills. Boland herself uses a cell phone, but with a speaker to keep the phone away from her head. She also leaves the phone off unless she's expecting a call. At issue is the radiation emitted by all cell phones. Well, you can't really give people a device that becomes essential and then claim that it kills them. If you did, well, then we've got a problem. Under the Boylan's bill, manufacturers would have to put labels on phones and packaging warning of the potentials for brain cancer associated with the electromagnetic radiation. The warnings would recommend that users, especially children and pregnant women, keep the devices from their head and body, which is kind of weird because it's a phone. The Federal Communications Commission, which maintains that all cell phones sold in the United States are safe, has set a standard for the specific absorption rate of radio frequency energy, but it doesn't require a handset to devolve its radiation levels. Well, it sounds like you're screwing around. So, yeah, cell phones put out radiation that fuck up your head. The San Francisco proposal would require the display of the absorption rate level over to next to each cell phone in print, at least twice as big as the price. Boland's bill was not specific about the absorption rates, but would require a permanent, non-removable advisory of risk in black type, except for the word warning, which would be larger and in red letters. It would also include a color graphic of a child's brain next to the warning. A child's brain, which is, you know, very easily identifiable from a grown-up brain. There is no chance this bill will pass. No chance this bill will pass. This thing is going to die. That's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that cell phones are, in fact, bad for you. Okay, that's the problem. And as more and more people are getting wired in and whatnot, it's, we all know it. We know it, don't we? It's like we're all in denial. Nobody wants to talk about it. But everybody's used a cell phone, and they've had it heat up, and they feel like they've got the headache afterwards. It's buzzing around the back. You know this stuff. You know this stuff. You know it's there. You know it's a real threat. You're probably better to use a corded system rather than and you wrap it around a magnet. I've heard about doing that. I used to do that. That doesn't cause the pain. That's one way to avoid the radiation. You take a hands-free system, wrap the cord around a magnet, and then plug it in the cell phone. It seems to work for me. I don't know. Somebody told me about it with the magnet for getting rid of line noise or something like that. Use these little magnets. It seemed to work. I never got the headaches because the phone was away. Mind you, this was a pretty old, you know, cell phone. So maybe it's not so big. And yeah, maybe some people don't really pick it up. But the bottom line here is that cell phones do something to your head. We know this. Okay, I know it for a fact. I can feel it. It's there. And, you know, the interesting part now is that everyone's going, oh, is it a real thing? Is it not a real thing? What does it mean? You know, oh, no, no, it's fine. Everything's fine. Well, my kid's kind of bleeding through the nose. No, no, it's good. So, you know, from the people that brought you DDT comes the cell phone. You know, I'd be a little sketchy with that. And speaking of which, these are the same people that bring you some pharma-fascist news. Hey, nothing like a little bit of pharma-fascism on Christmas Eve. Are you feeling bad? That's okay. We'll get you high. No problem. Drinking water, which contains the element lithium, may reduce the risk of suicide, a Japanese study suggests. Now, I covered this story a while ago, and the sick thing is that this lovely, lovely story is being picked up on Fox. It's being picked up on the BBC, which is where I've linked to, where everybody's getting into the act. Isn't it a great idea to stop your people from killing themselves, right? Researchers examined lithium levels in drinking water and suicide rates in the prefecture of Oita, which is a population of more than 1 million. The suicide rate was significantly lower in those areas with the highest levels of the element. They wrote in the British Journal of Psychiatry, high doses of lithium are already used to treat serious mood disorders. That's high doses. But the team from the University of Oita and Hiroshima found that even relatively low levels appeared to have a positive impact on suicide rates. Levels ranged from 0.7 to 0.7 to 59 micrograms per liter. So 0.7 micrograms to 59 micrograms, that's quite a scale. The researchers speculated that while these levels were low, they may be cumulative protective effort on the brain from years of drinking this tap water. I don't want the lithium, thank you. At least one previous study has suggested an association between lithium and tap water and suicide. The research on data collected from the 1980s also found a significantly lower rate of suicide in areas with high relatively lithium levels. The Japanese researchers called for further research in other countries, but stopped short of suggesting that the lithium should be added to the drinking water. The discussion around adding fluoride to water to protect dental health has provided controversial, criticized by some as mass involuntary medication. In an accompanying editorial, Professor Alan Young of Vancouver's Institute of Mental Health, thank you, Alan Young, said that this intriguing data should provoke further research. Yes, give me a grant, says Alan Young. I want to dope up the population. Large-scale trials involving the addition of lithium to drinking water supplies large-scale trials involving the addition of lithium to drinking water supplies may then be feasible, although this would undoubtedly be subject to considerable debate. Following up on these findings will not be straightforward or inexpensive, but the eventual benefits for community mental health may be considerable. Well, that all depends. If they can add that lithium under a guise of it being something other than drinking water, maybe there's acceptable levels that they don't need to tell you. I mean, honestly, if they loaded up your drinking water with lithium, would you even know? You know, would you know? Would you even pick it up? Would you figure it out, or would you just kind of keep on going and slowly become medicated? And why stop there with lithium? You know, hey, this lithium thing works pretty well. Where are they going to go with that? We're going to pack these people into rabbit-worn sort of cities where everybody's living in coffin hotels, and we're going to work them like dogs, man. Absolute dogs. We'll open up the doors, sell them these ideas of, you know, prosperity and new life. It's the oldest trick in the book. They did it to the Chinese in America, right? Go to China. Come to the new world. You'll get everything for free. Bang. They show up. They're slaves, right? You get all these slaves here, and your slaves are killing themselves, goddammit, because we push them too hard. So what are we going to do? Could we decrease the overall suffering of our population? No. No, that would be eliminating the cause of the suicides. No. Instead, what we'll do is we're going to dope everybody out. Because, after all, that way you can make money from suffering, which is what it's all about, really. I mean, you know, if you want to make money, hey, why not profit from suffering? No, there's no profit in a cure for cancer. There's only profit in a treatment. And that's why there's a lot of problems with some of the things that are going on in the medical industry. But I digress. So, let's move on to some brain scan news. I'm loving it. You know, can you get any better than a brain scan? You know, it used to be you could chew off your own tongue and you'd be able to keep your information safe, but not anymore. No, no, no. Thanks to Patient Zero for sending this in. By implanting an electrode into the brain of a person with a locked-in syndrome, okay, because this is a good thing, right? People can't talk, they're locked in, we need to make them talk. Scientists have demonstrated how to wirelessly transmit neural signals to a speech synthesizer. So, let me get this straight. So you can implant an electrode that wirelessly transmits what I'm thinking about saying to a speaker where you can listen to it. Okay? Holy McCrap. The thought-to-speech process takes about 50 milliseconds. Wow. The same time, the same amount of time for a non-paralyzed, neurologically intact person to speak their thoughts. The study marks the first successful demonstration of a permanently installed wireless implant for real-time control of an external device. The study is led by Frank Gunther of the Department of Cognitive and Neural Systems at the Sargent College of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences at Boston University, as well as the Division of Health Science and Technology at Harvard University, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Research teams include collaborators from Neural Signals Incorporated in Duluth, Georgia, blah, 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 and a bunch of other dudes. The results from the story show that the brain-machine interface, BMI, can control sound output directly rather than having to use the relatively slow typing process. In their study, the researchers tested the technology on a 26-year-old male who had a brainstem stroke at age 16. Bummer. The brainstem stroke caused a lesion between the volunteer's motor neurons to carry the actions to the rest of the brain. While his conscious and cognitive abilities are intact, he's paralyzed except for slow, vertical movement of the eyes, a rare condition called locked-in syndrome. Wow! Yeah, I would hope somebody would check me out. I would want to die. That would suck a lot. 5 years ago, when the volunteer was 21 years old, the scientist implanted an electrode near the boundary between the speech-related promoter of the primary motor cortex. Neurites began growing in the electrode into the electrode, and in 3 or 4 months, the neurites produced signaling pattern on the electrode wires that have been maintained indefinitely. This is exciting stuff. 3 years after implantation, the researchers have tested the brain-machine interface for real-time synthetic speech production. The system is telemetric. It requires no wires or connections passing through the skin, eliminating the risk of infection. Instead, the electrode amplifies and converts neural signals into a frequency FM radio signals. And these signals are wirelessly transmitted across the scalp in two coils, which are attached to the volunteer's head using a water-soluble paste. The coils act as an antenna for the RF signals. The implanted electrodes are powered by an induction power supply via power coil, which is also attached to the head. Pretty wild stuff. Now, of course, this is Gen 1, okay? This is Gen 1. But what this is like a needle. Really, this is a device they put into your brain so they can hear what you're going to say or what you're thinking about saying at this gen. So that can be used for good, and that can be used for evil. And, Patient Zero sent me that one. And, of course, I always blank on evil, so I have a holy cherry Christmas. In interrogation news, not that this has anything to do with my speech to text thing there that we were just talking about. No, this is totally unrelated. In interrogation news, thanks very much, Evil Von Scary. In the wake of a U.S. Supreme Court's refusal Monday to review a lower court's dismissal of a case brought by four former British Guantanamo prisoners against the former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, the detainee's lawyer charged Tuesday that the country's highest court evidently believes that torture and religious humiliation are permissible tools for a government to use. Now, religious humiliation, I think, is retarded. But, I guess I don't think that it's a crime to mess with religions. Anyway, but not to be, too over the top here. And for the record, I'm not too sure that really torture is going to be used whether or not we agree with it. Okay, you have to understand that. It's one of those things, all right? You can't get away from it. It will be used. I think that physical torture is ridiculous. We have drugs now, and we have the speech-to-text thing that you can interrogate somebody without, what is torture? Saying torture is like saying terrorist. Like, what is that? If I'm, some people could describe being locked in at Disneyland as torture. Other people pay money for that. The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. had ruled that government officials were immune from the suit because at the time it was unclear whether abusing prisoners at Guantanamo was illegal. Channeling their predecessors in the George W. Bush administration, Obama's Justice Department lawyers argued in this case that there is no constitutional right not to be tortured or otherwise abused in a U.S. prison abroad. The Obama administration has asked the court not to hear the case. By agreeing, the court let stand an earlier opinion by the D.C. Circuit Court, which found that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a statute that applies by its terms to all persons, did not apply to detainees at Guantanamo. effectively ruling the detainees are not persons for all purposes of U.S. law. The lower court has also dismissed the detainees' claim under the Alien Tort Statute that the Geneva Convention finding defendants immune on the basis that torture is a foreseeable consequence of the military's detention of a suspected enemy combatant. Finally, the circuit court found that if torture and religious abuses were illegal, defendants were immune under the Constitution because they could not have reasonably known that detainees at Guantanamo had any constitutional rights. The circuit court ruled that torture is a foreseeable consequence in the military's detention of suspect enemy combatants. Which, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me. If you get, if you're going to get captured, you can pretty much bet that you're going to get tortured. You know, it's crappy. This is why war is bad. See, that's a problem. That's a problem. When you got all these things like the Geneva Convention and stuff like that, it gives people the idea that there's rules in war. Like, war is somehow okay as long as you follow these rules. And that's ridiculous. Okay, that's retarded. War is absolutely atrocious. War is horrible. Okay? It's absolutely horrifying. So, you need to avoid war at all costs. You know, that's what you need to do. And I don't know what the answer to this is. I don't know what the... Just sit back and say, well, Sean, you know, you can't just have guys being, you know, turn it into some third world police state where everyone's getting, you know, their hands nailed to tables. No, absolutely not. Yet, you have to accept the reality of the fact that within the world, there will be people who don't care about your culture or what you think. And if you're at war with these people, war is a question of will, and it's horrible. It's dreadful stuff. But torture is going to happen. You can either accept that, or you can stick your head in the sand and play lawyer games with paper. You know, it's not my idea. If it was up to me, I'd get rid of it. But you're not going to be able to avoid it, man. It's just not going to happen. Good luck. If you can pull it off, hey, prove me wrong. But you're going to have a hard time making that shit pass off in Africa. In Body Bank News, sent in by Sovereign Ranger, thank you very much. Israel has admitted in the 1990s its forensics pathologist harvested organs from dead bodies, including Palestinians, without permissions from their families. Oh, bummer. The issue emerged in the publication of an interview with the then head of Israel's Abu Kabir Forensic Institute, Dr. Judah Hiss. The interview was conducted in 2000 by an American academic who released it because of a huge controversy last summer over the allegation by a Swedish newspaper that Israel was killing Palestinians in order to harvest their organs. Israel hotly denied the charges, of course. Parts of the interview were broadcast on Israel's Channel 2 TV over the weekend. In it, Hiss said, "We started to harvest corneas. Whatever was done was highly informal. No permission was asked from the family." The Channel 2 report said that the 1990s forensic specialist Abu Kabir harvested skin, corneas, heart valves, and bones from the body of bodies of Israeli soldiers, Israeli citizens, Palestinians, and foreign workers, often without permission from relatives. So in response to the TV report, the Israeli military confirmed that the practice took place. The activity ended a decade ago and does not happen any longer, the military said in a statement quoted by Channel 2. In the interview, Hiss described how his doctors would make the removal of the corneas of the bodies. "We'd glue the eyelids shut," he said. "We wouldn't take the corneas for families we knew would open the eyelids." Many of the details of the interview case first came to light in 2004, when Hiss was dismissed as head of the Forensics Institute because of irregularities over the use of organs there. Israel's attorney general dropped criminal charges against him, and Hiss still works as a chief pathologist at the Institute. He has no comment on the TV report. Hiss became the director of the Institute in 1988 and said in an interview that if the practice of harvesting organs without permission began in the early 1990s, however, he also said the military surgeons removed a thin layer of skin from bodies in early as 1987 to treat burn victims. Hiss said he believed that was done with family consent, but the harvesting ended in 2000, he said. Complaints against the Institute, where autopsies of dead bodies were performed at the time of his dismissal, came from relatives of Israeli soldiers and civilians, as well as Palestinians. The bodies belonged to people who died from various causes, including disease, accidents, and Israeli-Palestinian violence, but there's been no evidence to back up the claim from the Swedish newspaper. Aftonbladet, that Israeli soldiers killed Palestinians for their organs. Angry Israeli officials called the report anti-Semitic, which, you know, hey, if you're going to be a Jew and people say stuff about you, you can call them anti-Semitic, and that doesn't make them anti-Semitic, though. I think it just makes them so that they're pissed off that someone might be stealing your organs. However, personally, I don't really have a problem with this. going to piss a lot of people off, but you know what? If it's the difference between your kid is dead, mom, and I've got this kid here who needs to see, and so I'm going to use spare parts from your kid's body to make my people see. And if you don't like it, I'd rather endure the trial of you disliking me because of something I did to a dead piece of meat versus this child going blind because I couldn't get the spare parts I needed in a pinch. You know what I mean? Like, why is this a problem? If they were killing people for the organs, okay, yeah, now that's a totally different issue. All right, but if I was the head doctor there and I'm seeing this, we need transplants, I got a lot of dead bodies showing up. Dead bodies showing up need transplants. And there's just paperwork between me and healing people? Fuck it, let's heal people. You know, that's how I'd run. So as long as you're not killing people to do it, I really don't have a huge problem there. That's just me, you know, probably piss off a lot of people. In Cyberpunk Kit, we got some interesting stuff coming down the pipe from Panasonic. On Monday, Panasonic announced that the majority control of Sanyo Electric's country, grabbing 50.27% stake in the once profitable company. So Sanyo now belongs to Panasonic. So it should be like, I thought it might be Toshiba, but it's now going to, instead of being Panashiba, it's going to be Sanyosonic, maybe? I don't know. Now, Panasonic has revealed it will take advantage of the Sanyo rechargeable battery technology to make lithium-ion storage cell for the home, for like a lithium-ion storage cell for home use sometime around fiscal 2011. So pretty close here. Fumio Otsubo, president of Panasonic, told the Yomiuri Shimbun via Trading Markets that the battery will store sufficient electrical power to power a Japanese household for about 1 week. Wow. We're in a position closest among firms to realizing a CO2 emission-free daily life. Okay. Now we're talking. Never mind I'm not interested in my house. Okay, this is all about a boat. You can give me battery power for a week on a boat? That's sweet. You can run solar and wind off of a boat. You could have an electrically powered boat. This is some pretty sexy stuff. Panasonic plans to sell a storage battery along with a system that allows end users to track electricity usage through the home-based display, perhaps a TV in the den or living room. Unfortunately, Shimbun didn't go into details regarding how the battery works or how long it takes to recharge. Ultimately, this may be an item provided by the local electric company, as both the provider and the consumer would benefit from the type of energy storage device. Of course, we're assuming the storage battery can support the AC unit and appliances, lighting, and other various PCs all at once, and they may not be the case at all. But I'm here to tell you, if I could travel my way down the coast in my electric boat, and all I gotta do is show up and plug in, rip off a little bit of power, and carry on my way with 7-day trips at a time, oh yeah! Yeah, I'm interested in that. I want to find out more about that. That's a very, very sweet piece of Cyberpunk Kit. And let's not forget about some NeuroStims. Hey, it's Christmas Eve. Probably feeling a little bit bummed out because, you know, it's the dark times. That's why they put the holiday here. It's the three darkest days of the year, right? 21st, 22nd, 23rd. In around there, December, it's always really dark. So to make everybody feel better and keep the lab rats happy, of course, they put a nice big holiday right there. Spunk. And, you know, you got lots of lights and everything, and giving people presents, stimulate the economy, you know, good to go. So if you're having a hard time with it, and you're not getting enough lithium in your water, don't worry, I got some NeuroStims for you. That's another piece of Cyberpunk Kit. While you're roving out, and you aren't always or even often anywhere near a hospital or a pharmacy, but if you pack these nutritional supplements and natural medications wherever you go, you'll be able to cope just fine. And these are herbal remedies, which are available in your local health food store. I perused the list, and they have some interesting stuff on there. You may wish to check it out. You're only as good as your medicine and technology make you. And as well, we've got your daily hacks today. Some pretty good cyberpunky stuff. A do-it-yourself RFID gun, which fries RFID tags. Thanks for coming out. The gun hunts only RFID tags. It's been made by a guy who brought us a laser gesture control. He built this RFID zapper and included so much more. Any good weapon has a sound mean. And a feat is accomplished by incorporating an MP3 player into the rifle. The coil that zaps the RFID tags is powered by a photo flash unit for visual feedback. He's got a second unit that flashes light to signal the demise of your German passport. It's hard to believe they haven't covered RFID zappers before. But there we go. We got that for your daily hack as well. We got a piece of freeware. Always a good idea in this crazy age we're living in. This thing called Steganos Locknote, sent in by William. Thank you very much for sending this in. What is Steganos Locknote? Store your most valuable notes as a locknote. Hide your essential serial numbers, passwords, phone numbers, blah, 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 blah. Double-click on a locknote, enter your password, access in your text files as usual. No installation required. Encrypts using text files in no time at all. And, of course, it's open and free for you to take a look at. Very, very cool. So, something to go with. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back for the next decade to make sure that you get the news you need to survive. This has been 10 years of free podcasting brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. And if you cannot donate to the show, please distribute. Give this show out to other people. But if you can donate, please do so. We need the help. Clicking on the Donate tab at the Dark Atlas website or anywhere on the Rant Media Studios. Or you can just send me an envelope. If you want to make sure it gets to me, you can send it to Rant Media Studios, address it to Sean Kennedy, Box 95089370 East Broadway, Vancouver, BC, Canada, V5T1W0. Two digital baptisms squeezed in just before the next decade. Squiz is now Fundy Pedestrian. Like fundamentalist? Like a fundamentalist pedestrian? As I always used to say to people, what are you? I'm a pedestrian. Now you're a Fundy pedestrian. Ha ha! And Slipstream JC is actually opening up a internet cafe. And he wanted me to name it for him. So after much thinking, I've decided that a good name for your cafe would be, for your internet cafe, would be called the Dark Fiber Caffeine House. So that would be your digital baptism there. And I want to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@rantradio.com. And be sure to sign up for the Rant newsletter by sending an email to info@rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, please check out some Psytrance. And of course, I'm going to fade out now with a track from Neil Diamond. And have a holy cherry cherry Christmas. This is one of the awesomest songs ever. Holy cherry cherry Christmas. If for those of you in Second Life, look it up now, because it's sexual chocolate. I gotta tell you. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
Wish you a very merry cherry cherry Christmas and a holly holy holiday too. Underneath your tree may there always be sounds of harmony, not a song sung blue. Just a very merry cherry cherry Christmas. And if all of those who love you gather near, you'll have a very merry cherry cherry holly holy rock and rolly Christmas this year. When the snow drops on the treetops, it's a pretty amazing scene. Hear the choir, light the fire, feels like pretty amazing grace, if you know what I mean. Oh yeah, it's Christmas time. In a world of make-believe, I'm a believer, and I believe in things not always understood. But the things you feel make believing real. That's why Christmas feels so good, so good, so good. When you imagine all the world as one great chorus, you're gonna learn that every voice has got a song. Let's raise a Christmas toast of red, red wine. We'll even sing Sweet Caroline while the whole world sings along. Children laughing, it's a beautiful noise that lifts you like a song. makes you wanna have a very merry, holly, holy, cherry, cherry Christmas time the whole.